Hey everyone, thank you and welcome to today's roundtable. Today we are tackling a deceptively simple question: who owns revenue after the deal closes? On paper, hey, it's obvious. In practice, it's a mess. So today I'm thrilled to be joined by three people who aren't afraid to unpack that messy middle. Here's a couple quick ground rules before we dive in. This is not a sales pitch or a company spotlight. There are no brands, there are no filters, just honest opinions. Before we get into it, hey, let's meet the panel. Hey, everyone, welcome. Let's meet you.
Hello.
Jeff, let's have you go first.
All right. I'm Jeff Kaczmarek, and I'm a Scorpio.
Okay. So I'm Anthony DeShazer. I live in Atlanta, and I'm a Libra.
Hi, I'm Eleni Vorvis. I live in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I am a Sagittarius.
I feel compelled to say I'm Melissa Nolte, and I'm also a Sagittarius, but I'm a cusping, okay. I'm a cusping Scorpio, so I'm right in the middle between those two.
What's your date?
11/23.
Okay.
One of my daughters, I have three daughters. That's one of my daughter's birthdays. Yeah. Hospital turkey is the best.
Exactly. I was telling people that I ruined my mom's Thanksgiving.
Oh, wow.
So we're going to get right into it. Who owns revenue after the deal?
I've got a question I'll ask all of you. That person who runs sales with the C title, what does the R stand for?
Revenue.
Oh,
wow. Yes, revenue.
So, I don't know. So I will ask this back to Alyssa. Not to do the standard CSBS answer with it depends, but I do see a little bit of like this bow tie thing where it starts off one place, moves to the next, and goes to the other. So what stage are you particularly thinking about when you ask that question? Series A, public company, somewhere in between?
I'm gonna say that I think I want to have a more fundamental conversation, right? So let's talk about just in best practice. And first, let's start with kind of our more established companies, because I'm a pre-revenue startup, right? So we're basically just like, I'm everything. Everybody owns everything, right? But if you're in a company that's quote unquote grown up, who maybe has a sales team, has a CS team, and in theory should be successful enough to figure it out, who owns the revenue?
I believe the owner of the revenue should be the one that can understand and work within revenue constraints, knows how to run a pipeline, understands the terms, what a P&L is, and all of those things. Unfortunately, so I see it like this, and I'm sure you all see this too. Series A and startups and things like that. The sales team starts to own that because they're usually hiring some more junior resources as CS, and they have absolutely no idea how to run in revenue, and they're doing all the things like implementation and onboarding and support questions and things like that. Then suddenly the sales team is being told to just focus on getting new logos, essentially, right? So they need somebody to come in and focus on the revenue. And that's where it gets a little tricky, right? Because what if you've got a tech CEO founder, right? They do not know. Can I swear on this?
They don't. I think you can. Yeah.
They don't know shit about revenue, right? They usually know about how to build a product, and now they're the chief like funding officer or evangelist and things like that. So you need that person who is now owning CS to have a person that they can rely on, unless you bring in some big player that has been through that, and maybe that you are, that knows how to like run it like a pipeline and things like that. But then I see when I get big, it suddenly goes back into the sales team or whatever. Maybe sales owns the CS team at that point in time, which kind of makes it a little bit moot at that point. So that's my observation on that.
I actually agree with you largely in this sense. If there is a CRO,
yeah,
then I think the CRO owns the whole thing. Now, they may delegate some of that to some customer success leader. That's fine. Yeah. If there isn't a CRO, if a company, for whatever, be it culture or how they go to market, decides to specialize and have an actual post-signature team all around a CCO, then I think the CCO mostly should own it. Should be, and what I mean by own it, they should be comped by it. They should be responsible for it. It's what they report. It's what the whole company holds them accountable to do. But it really comes down to what is the go-to-market motion for the company? How are they going to market? If it's all under a CRO, it's very clear.
I know I'm totally sorry, but one last thing, I'll go on mute. It's not talk over people, but I really like how you said this is their KPI and that's how they're incentivized, right? Because if you're owning revenue, but you don't, I always say, hey, who owns revenue? And the CS team's like, oh, we do. And I'm like, who gets the commission on the renewal? And they're like, the sales team does. I'm like, you, my friend, are a sucker.
Correct. Correct. You have to have some skin in the game. You got to be comped on it, be it from a bonus standpoint, ideally from some sort of commission. And you have to have the responsibility. It has to be something that you're held accountable for.
Lainey, go.
Yes. You guys are picking a lot of the points. I agree. If there's a chief revenue officer in place and if CS is reporting to him. So my background has been predominantly owning revenue under customer success, whether it's been an individual quota that I've had as a CSM, a group number as a CSM, or as a leader, you know, owning revenue. That doesn't necessarily mean that if you own it, you have to do all of the work. So depending on the stage and the go-to-market motion, my opinion has been, let's talk about retention and just renewals. I think renewals naturally fit in the customer success department because we're working directly with customers to deliver value, and it becomes a natural part of the customer journey. And it's a milestone in which you're having a conversation, right? Not days and weeks before they renew, but alongside their journey to make sure that that value is being delivered. When it comes to expansion, cross-sell, or upsell, it really is depends on the software that you're selling, right? If it's something that doesn't require maybe selling into a different part of the business and starting a sales motion from the beginning, then customer success can own and get compensated on that. If it requires a new business unit, a sale that will take some time, then perhaps pass it over to sales or partner with sales.
SQL 100%, right?
Absolutely.
Or you partner together. Like my experience has been partnering with an AE to expand an existing customer and we both get compensated. But Anthony, you make a really good point about there needs to be a compensation structure that is aligned, because if it's not, then you're going to fight over who owns the revenue, or there's going to be a blurred line on who actually owns the revenue. And unless you have a conversation between CS leadership and sales leadership on that, you're going to butt heads, and you may find that the sales rep is behaving in a certain way and you're thinking, well, why is this person taking over or taking control? It's not until you ask the question on, help me understand how you're compensated. I've had this happen as a CSM. Then I understood why this person was staying involved, was suggesting the things that he was suggesting, because he was getting compensated on things like a multi-year deal and the first time the customer renews. But the sales and CS leadership were not having those aligned conversations. So it can really get very messy. And you have to be very clear about it. And you also have to enable people to do it. The last thing I'll pass it off is, if you want CS to own revenue and to have commercial responsibility, you can't just flip the switch and they do it overnight. You have to train them on how to do it and help them understand how they are poised and well positioned to be able to do it. It's not being purely a salesperson. It's leveraging what you already do as a successful CSM. If you do your job well, it's not going to feel like you're selling.
Yeah, there's another thing that I wanted to bring up. And I was actually just having this conversation with a very successful salesperson yesterday. And it reminded me that a lot of these people, especially if the better ones specialize in focusing like a particular type of technology, let's just say like HR tech, right? Just to be like, oh, just to get the concept, like those people will go from one HR tech company to the next company. And they then will sell to the person over and over and over again and things like that. So that another thing they want to do is just maintain those relationships, right? So that, and the other thing is that they also know the people that they sell to will go to other companies and they want to go sell the same thing as well. Because a lot of people don't think about that, right? Like, you know, again, to double on what you were saying, you know, clear, racy, whatever, but you need to know the lines of where it is, who does what type of thing, like upsell versus cross-sell, seats versus new BU, all of those types of scenarios so that people stop, you know, shooting across each other's bow and stuff like that.
The other area there, and Jeff, thank you for bringing that up, is like we have to understand that there are different types of selling motions. And it's unless you do it full time, it's hard for a CS person to actually know all of those different methodologies for selling and know everything you need to know about running, you know, customer success and doing all those things. So in certain go-to-market motions, for example, I've had experience in high-end enterprise where, and when I mean enterprise, I mean the true multinational conglomerates, where it is an AE walk in the halls because you're trying to get to another, the sister corporation underneath a larger corporate umbrella. Yeah, CS is going to struggle in that environment if they're owning the renewal, because the renewal is often tied up to other commercial conversations going on at the same time. Yeah. And so in those types of environments, I don't think CS will be well poised to own and lead those renewals. Now, they absolutely should be have some skin in the game about driving what I call the ease of renewal. Are you really driving the outcomes that the customers value that's now enabling those commercials conversations? You can have metrics around that, but are you driving that? That should be where their metric, or where they're, you know, what they own. But in those larger environments, you got to have an account executive walk in the halls.
Yeah, the account needs to be in good shape, right? You can't upsell unhappy customer, essentially, right?
Well, you
let
could.
Jump in and say, though, we're talking about, you know, CS owning revenue and getting compensated for portions of the customer lifecycle. What if I don't want to do that as a CS? That's not why I got into CS. I didn't get in here to do sales.
You're so you guys can exchange quoting patterns and everything else. Like that. Yeah, the relationship aspects and the commercial will disturb our friendship, that you only have a friendship because you got engaged in a commercial conversation. Yeah, no, I think it's complete bullshit. And those people are wondering why they're floating from job to job right now. So,
I mean, the reality is that if you look at customer success, the whole premise behind it, and even the recurring, you know, business models at all, is that you assume with the right product, usage of the product leads to outcomes that the customers value enough to renew. So if you're not looking at the entire chain and you're only focused on one part of it, you are limiting your career. You're limiting what companies you can work for. There is still room for you, because there are some companies that at certain stages, they're just trying to get the product market fit going on. They're still very heavy on just adoption and adoption only. But
try not to be a cost center.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I think too, that person might also be a good fit in an organization that has expanded beyond just the customer success manager owning revenue and renewals. There could be a renewals team. There could be account management portion. But when I'm talking to people about going into CS, I really talk about the commercial aspects. I think it's important for them to understand that that is where you want to be, because if you are a cost center, you will be cut and your job security is, I think, more at risk nowadays. I mean, a lot has happened, I think, in the SaaS space. So even when you're commercially focused, that can happen, but you're not able to tie what you're doing, right, your productivity, your success, directly to the revenue impact on the business. And so it's then harder to get that headcount to ask for budget to really demonstrate why CS needs to exist. So if you want to just focus on adoption and building relationships, maybe you should focus on implementation, education, or customer marketing. So I think there's a place for those people, but to be able, if you can't deliver value for your customer, don't become a customer success manager. That's our number one job. And that then if you are doing that, then the revenue comes. They will renew. Yep. They'll look to expand. But if you're just trying to make them happy, happy does not equal successful. It does not equal ROI. The CFO that's looking at 20 other SaaS vendors that they're working with is going to say, what is this line item? What have we done with this company? And if your buyer and champion are saying, well, not much, but we love working with them, those days are gone.
Yeah. These are also the same people that The CSM goes in and marks the sentiment as green because everybody was pleasant to each other. And then they went,
yeah,
I don't know what happened. They like, you know, we were exchanging recipes.
So if we're all in violent agreement here that CS should not be a cost center, why is this not the reality of many companies in the ecosystem?
CS, a lot of CS teams don't want it. I don't know what the split is. It used to be like 50-50 or 70-30, but like, it's still a very popular conversation point about should they even be commercially obligated right now. And I just laugh because we all know what happens when you're a cost center. It's just, there is a point in time where you're just gone. But like, again, people think it's a relationship thing. It's showing the value. how can I have a salesy conversation and get their respect and everything? And, but then you also hear on the flip side, like, why bring in the salesperson back in to do a renewal if they haven't talked to you for 9 months and they've got no context with your business? Who else knows the company better in the outcomes that you're trying to get them? That, like, who would be better than you to have that conversation and things like that? And maybe you need this new module as well too. So,
yeah, I think it's almost a philosophical, almost religion type thing. You know, there's some people that are sold that CS is all about outcomes and we stop at outcomes. And I think we have to go beyond that. It's the outcomes that lead to value that then leads to renewal. That is an expansion. That's the whole promise. That's what we're there to do. But the other piece of that, I think we have to also kind of just call out certain companies. It's not just the CS leader, it's the whole leadership's view of what CS does. And that is something else we have to really fight against. How do we shift the narrative? And
most people just think CS does support. Isn't that what they do?
Oh, yeah. And that's what CS stands for, right? Customer support. You're just glorified support people.
Just bad naming. Such a bad
thing. Exactly. Yeah. It is.
Right? Like customer service, that really annoys me, right? Customer service has its role and we all use it as, you know, consumers of other products. But I think, Alyssa, just go back to, like, why aren't more companies moving away from being a cost center? I think more so have in the last couple of years. There's definitely an agreement that this is the direction we need to move in. I think it's the readiness, right? Or they're afraid to make the change. They don't have the right people on board in the customer success team to make that change, that transition.
Commercial conversations. They could be TAMs. They could be super technical products, or where they just know those teams and they see them that, and they just, you know, you get sort of pigeonholed, but like, that person can't have a commercial conversation. I'm not going to trust that person to own revenue, especially since holding on to customers is super important these days because it's harder to close deals.
Yeah, it's change management. It's what we talk about with our customers as CS folks. It's the looking inward at the change management. They know that they need to make the change, their desire to change, but they can't make a commitment because they would need to overhaul their people, process, and technology. And it all depends on what their priorities are at the moment. For these highly technical products where you need somebody that's a subject matter expert, I think that in becomes a challenge. So in those models, perhaps it is bringing in someone on the team that can have that commercial conversation, and maybe you create a pod model. So I've seen some organizations move to that type of structure to be able to have the expertise.
Yeah, my experience.
Have you seen any good results out of a pod model?
I actually have.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's because of the culture, and it's the culture of the company. We had a lot of it was a very technical product. It just really worked. And so it was back in the early days of big data, when big data and Hadoop was all, science experiments. And we found that our CSMs had to be more technical to help customers develop the right big data strategy that will then suck in our product, if you would. And so in that sense, we had to hire CS and make CS more technical.
So who had the commercial, who did the renewal in that group?
That case, I had a group of CSMs that were more commercially minded, working with CSMs or technical account managers, if you would. And I paired those together in order to really drive the conversation, because it wasn't enough.
It was account management, right?
You can call it that, because I had clear lines of distinction between the two, but they were collaborative in the account the year round. And so it could be account management or whatever, but we brought it in because to me, terms kind of just get in the way.
No, I agree. It's jobs, jobs to be done. Somebody needs to do these jobs.
Exactly. And so I looked at my team. All right. I need this skill set to be successful because I have an adoption issue over here. I got to solve that in order to get to the renewal. So let me bring in the people that help me do the adoption. And I'm going to pair, my CS that we're doing the renewal had a lot more customers than my technical CSMs, because we did most of the heavy lift with the technical CSMs, and we brought in the more commercially minded CSMs to handle the renewal conversations. Done that now at two different companies. So it can work, but it really drives into the company, the culture, and what is the product? What are you actually selling?
I'm curious, and what do you depending on this too, is that, or would you just bring in like a 50K SDR type that's just going to crank out the DocuSigns all day for renewals?
Well, that's in some cases, that's what I did. I had a diverse CSM team that were commercially minded. And when I had the long tail, those were people that could just really process the paperwork, because the long tail couldn't really spend too much on that end. But when I had the enterprise on the larger end, I had more commercially minded who can do the negotiations and do those things. And so I didn't, it really became by segment. It's like, okay, on this segment, here's what I could spend. Here's what I can get out of it. So this is the this is the resource set I put together for that. What I think is going to be very interesting in this new world of AI is, how do we do this now without seeing?
There won't be CSMs. There'll be an agent that'll talk to your CS agent all day. I mean,
bingo. And so I, in my mind, that still means that if you have a CS leader who's now focused on driving the overall CS strategy, their org chart may be a bunch of agents, but that's what they have. I still think the CS leadership, if there is one.
Well, I mean, we'll be doing the higher level work.
So. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't personally experienced the pod model, but I was hearing about it recently at the Chief Customer Office Summit in New York. And also this conversation around, should CSMs be generalists or specialists, right? And the pros and cons of each, and having a debate around that. I think if they are going to be specializing, then I'm not quite sure you can specialize in the technology in that domain and then also have the commercially minded conversations. It depends on the person. I feel like that's a hard skill set to find.
Yeah.
And but the role of CSM, you're asked to do a lot. So to kind of balance both is really hard. That's where I think
the TAMs did this. This is what I was a TAM. Like the TAMs did this back in the day, right? Like you were technical, you knew all the stuff, and then it was time to have these relationship conversations. Right.
But how successful were these TAMs in growing the business and expanding the expansion revenue? So maybe renewal, okay, but what about the expansion side of things?
So this is where the line of demarcation would be, right? So you actually said this earlier, so I'm going to vaunt it right back to you. Yep. You know, but think about, like, you don't bring in a specialist for five seats, right? I always bring up when I was at one company and we sold into Yum Brands, and the first customer we got lit up was Taco Bell. I like Taco Bell. Everybody likes Taco Bell, right? So Taco Bell needs five extra seats. Sure, I'm going to get you, CSM is going to do five extra seats for you. When they say, hey, it's time to sell into KFC, like the AE gets brought back into that conversation, right? The person who originally sold that deal, the account exec sold that deal, and they go back out and do have that higher commercial, which, as you were saying, more of a sales cadence, new BU, you got to follow the whole like medic process or whatever's going on in there and all that stuff and everything. So.
Yeah. And then there's kind of the in-between, right? There's like seats. Those are kind of opposite end of the spectrum. Then there might be just adding in new features, or you've got some users and it's a pilot group and then you're expanding it out. I think that's where, again, keep it in CS, but you have to have the right support structure in place to be able to have the time to do those things as well. Like, we didn't talk about like what other things are these customer success managers doing if your company is asking them to also be like education and training and to put together marketing motions, etc. That's going to be a lot of work. I think we're assuming they're not doing support stuff, because that's, I think, one of the first things to be, you know, separated out. Or if you're getting to that point to be talking about CS owning renewals, there is a support person or a team that's addressing those.
Somebody's job if they're doing support.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole lot that's underneath CS owning revenue that I think companies need to be ready for. Because if in order to create the bandwidth for the CS leader or CSM or the CS team to go out and have those commercial conversations, that means there's some things they may have to take off their plate. Mm-hmm. If they're creating all the marketing and content, because I've been in CS teams where the CSM was responsible for creating their own content. And because it's a case, you know, to your point, CS often becomes the stopgap for everything. And so you have to now really look at what work is the CSM doing if you want them to be commercial.
There's so many different flavors. That's the thing. That's why the answer a lot of times is it depends. It's kind of just crazy to see, even in 2025, like I could have, you know, 10 conversations and have 10 different flavors of customer success. So you're always having a level set on how do you define CS? What are the departments within there? What are your
titles? Work, right? That's why it has to be jobs to be done.
Yep. And that's why account management and account managers and CSM, like the lines have been blurred, or is it, like, doesn't matter what you call it. It's what is the role that you're doing?
What is the job? What is it, what
they have at that company? You may need both if the jobs to be done are not the same, but if they are the same, then you don't need to have these separate functions. It's almost like we're going back to how things were before there was customer success. There was account management and they handled a lot of these things. So
I'm saying dangerous.
We're just going back to that. We're going backwards in some ways, but now we've got
make account management great.
Easier. Yeah.
Get that trademark, put it on a t-shirt or a hat. We have a lot of comments flying in, so I'm gonna read one of them to you for your reaction. This is from Malisha. Hopefully I'm saying that right. CSM should know what their expectations are at the time of hiring. Now, if that changes based on the business and the role is going to be more commercial, a conversation needs to be had for transparency, and then an educated decision can be made.
100%
agree. Like somebody had a non-commercial job and then was told that they need to be commercial. And then we get back into the religious aspect of what Anthony was bringing up.
But it's the truth, though. I mean, when you hire a person, and I've been trying to help some companies understand this, you have to hire what you need today. You could think about tomorrow, but if you put too much focus on tomorrow, you may never get there. So you need to hire what you need today with some thought about what may need to be there and what other skills I may need to have in this individual to help them adjust. But when your strategy changes, you have to go through a whole change management process where there needs to be some sort of transparency, because who you hire, one of the books I love is What Got You Here Won't Get You There. You know, that's a great book. It's the same thing. Companies go through different stages, and who you hire in one stage may not be the right person for you in the second stage, but there needs to be transparency. There needs to be very clear, open communications and training to help people adjust to the shift. But I think the commenter is right on. That needs to be part of the change management that has to go with any sort of shift in strategy.
Yeah. And I think the other thing to keep in mind, if you're working for a startup and if you're someone that has worked at several startups and scale ups, things will change. So that's the other thing I make very clear in the hiring process or in talking to individuals who are trying to navigate a career in customer success, is that it will change. You may go into where a model is sales is owning revenue in this aspect, then it changes 6 months later, then we make adjustments, right? We have to do something and learn from it and then make a change. But you're absolutely right. If you don't communicate the change, and tomorrow I come in and you tell me you're doing X, Y, and Z, and I ask why, and the answer back is, well, it doesn't matter. This is your new role. Perhaps as an administrator.
When you're at a startup, it's like, you know, there's a difference between working for a startup and working for Fidelity, right?
Well, I agree.
You know, and like, you're not going to get you're lucky if you don't have an outsourced HR leader at a Series A company, right? Like, so if shit needs to change, shit's going to change, right? I will say, though, the typical thing that I'm used to seeing is that for startup Series A and things like that, the CS role is super generalist. I always call this Pangea. It's the supercontinent. They do everything, right? And then they start continental drift and North America becomes renewals and all this other stuff. And some people hate it when that happens. Oh, I like being able to dance around and do everything and all this other stuff. And then that's like, yeah, you're a generalist. You want to go work and that's your thing. You like startups where you're kind of wearing a whole ton of hats. And when it comes time to wear one specific, I've also just seen things where, you know, we had, when we did that break and I was like, hey, we got two different types of roles now instead of one. We've got CS people who are going to do the renewals and then X, Y, and Z. And then we've got implementation people who you're only going to talk with your customers for 30 days and you're going to be out. And two people who are kind of like me who are sociopaths. Like, that's it. I just want to get you live and not talk to you again. Like, very well. I love you. I don't want to see you ever again.
But this is where I think CS, you know, anyone in CS need to know where you specialize. What environment do you thrive in? Because you're absolutely right, Jeff. A startup, Series A, pre-Series A, you're wearing every hat. There's not a lot of formality in how change management happens. There's transparency in some of those. Maybe a little too much transparency, but there's transparency there. But you need to know where you thrive. If you're not a startup person, don't go there. But if you're also someone that needs more structure, more formality, then don't go to a startup. You know, you got to know where you thrive.
Yeah, unless you're ready to not only wear all the hats and invent new hats at the drop of a hat, you're going to really struggle in a startup. I have the opposite problem. I struggle in large organizations where there is a lot of rigidity and structure. I'm very much a startup person. So I think it's really about having self-awareness of who you are and where you fit. On that note, we have a comment from Amber. If we put ourselves in our customer's seat, what do our customers need or want from their CS team? What should CS be doing to meet their customers' expectations while also ensuring retention and renewals?
Oh, so I think the challenge I have with this question is that the customers don't care about what team they're talking to. They just want the product, the company to deliver on the promise. And so whether that's the CS team, sales team, implementation, it really doesn't matter. And so as a CS leader, or even as someone as a CSM, your job, in my opinion, figure out what the customer needs in terms of value. What does value mean to them? If you're assigned an account, you really need to understand what does value mean and how do you use every resource that the company has and the customer has to drive that value. So that means you got to go backwards. This is what they're trying. And I always ask people, you know, when I'm talking to CSMs, you got to know the why behind the why. Saving money for a company, for a customer, is not necessarily the strategic goal they have. It may be a tactic. They may be saving money so they can invest in some other part of R&D. So you got to understand what is value to them and then back your way to how do you drive the usage of the product that leads to the outcomes that then turn into value that they're willing to pay for. So it's that understanding of your value chain and how you can use it to help them reach their goals.
But Anthony, we swapped pictures of our dogs and I'm your trusted advisor. And don't you care to only work with me as your CSM?
No.
Like, I've heard a lot of people who are like, no, I'm the only one who gets to be their friend because we're friends.
My advice back, my snarky comment is, what do you need to be a trusted advisor, right? You need trust. You need to have good fucking advice, right?
Right.
And so what I see a lot of the time is exactly like, oh, we swapped dog pictures. We met at the kombucha stand at the farmer's market. And it's not about that, right? It is about not delighting your customers. You know, I work with Jane Athel on a lot of things. And we were talking to the HubSpot customer success team last week. And we were talking about it's what Anthony was just saying. It's the outcomes. That's all that they care for. We don't care if they're delighted, right? But the good CSMs need to know, what's the business problem that you're solving? How do we map that up to what our technology does and make sure that's all working seamlessly and then providing them these outcomes back? You had a problem so much so that you went through a bake-off and decided what vendor to go with. You got budget allocated and things like that. So there's a problem. Okay, how are you as the buyer, how are you KPI'd on whether this was successful or not? Now I'm going to show, and that's not showing you usage statistics.
No.
What does the usage get you? Sure. Is it a 10% increase in Y, X, Y, and Z? Sorry, I'm going off. I meant I said I'm going to let it leave.
Yeah. I agree with both of what you're saying. I think the other thing too, when I think of every interaction you're having with the customer, right? This is outcomes-based. That's what they need and want. If there's something that goes wrong with the software, the other thing is like they don't care who's going to fix it. Someone needs to fix it.
Get it fixed.
Speaking critical, it needs to get fixed ASAP. And you also need to keep the lines of communication open. The other thing they're looking for is, tell me something I don't already know. So don't regurgitate information in your QBR. You're calling to check in. I want to learn something new from you, from other customers who I'm wanting to be like, other people that you have as executive sponsors I want to interact with, right? Our stakeholders want to look good, get promoted, and be successful in their career path. So if you think about those things, those are the other ways in which...
Yeah, talk. Did you ever dive into the Reddit, the customer success Reddit?
Not enough.
Like, it's the real world, not LinkedIn, where it's like, you know,
everyone's curated. Anonymous, so we all say what we really think.
Yeah.
There were some friends of mine that were pissed off that it was anonymous because they want their advice to be taken as this sage sort of thing. And I'm just like, well.
Nah, it really was.
There are ways. Anyways, I poke in there a lot anonymously. And you know, there was I see a constant thing, which is my boss wants me to be strategic. What does strategic even mean? And it's crazy, right? Like, remember the, like, look up, and you can do this all with AI these days, but like, look them up, look up the 10K. What are their problems? What are they trying to solve for? What are the, there are so many CSMs that don't know their customer's business and what they even do. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I actually want to double down on that because you said two things that just really, or at least two things came out that I had a visceral reaction to.
It's just like,
I hate going to any QBR, EBR, where the only thing you're showing me is usage statistics.
Well, what if we talked about the weather first? Wouldn't that make
It's like, it only show me the usage if it's helping you or helping me understand how I can get to my value. You know, I how much my team is spending on, you know, who's logging in, who's not. Only show that to me if that's going to lead to value.
Yeah. What is our product that is, you said it one time, forgetting you never have to log into it.
Exactly. The second piece that I think that we have to be very, very just spot on. And I love customer experience. My last job, I was both customer experience and customer success. And my point is you have to have both.
Experience in this regard, because that's one of those terms that I get a visceral reaction about.
Sure. We can go through that. It's how customers, the experience they have with interacting with your entire company.
So the UX then.
UX, even the UX, yes. But I want to make sure when we say UX, it's not just UI. It's the whole user experience. The whole challenge we have is every word is charged right now. It's like every word, I have a visceral reaction to this word, but it's okay. It's okay. We can get through this. But my point is you gotta deliver the outcomes and the value. That's primary. I've had too many customers in my experience that love me and then left me at the same time.
Right. That's how you go from green to red.
That's exactly. I love you guys, but we're going in a different direction. We love working with you. But I've also had customers, and this is the hard truth for those that are that may be more on the experience side, is that I've had customers hate working with me, but stayed because we drove the outcomes and the value that they needed.
Yeah. And if you have a garbage UX that looks like something on Vista 98, but it's delivering everything that you possibly need in terms of outcomes too.
Nobody loves Microsoft Word or Excel, and yet we all use it because it delivers
exactly.
What we need to deliver.
Yeah, it delivers. I think the other thing to say on this comment on like what did they want? They want their CSM to have business acumen. So if you don't know how to look up a 10K, put it into ChatGPT. Try to fundamentally understand your customer's business. I think there's some terms, financial literacy on the CS side, right? Janielle talks about this a lot. Learn the definitions behind the metrics and ask questions. So don't just go into the role and think the numbers don't matter for you because someone's going to keep track of them or maybe explain them. You need to ask why. Why are we doing it this way? Because it could vary from company to company. So the more comfortable you get with numbers and doing your homework, it will show to that customer and they'll say, okay, how do you build the trust? I want to talk to somebody who understands and is not just reading from a script, is giving me a generic playbook and has no idea what I even do for a business. You can find that information very easily. So spend less time on making sure your slides look beautiful or you're, you know, doing things that could just be automated. Like focus on actually become, these are the things that you do to become strategic, etc. But if you've never done it before,
still need a coaching. You need someone
still
to help.
Coaching, need someone to learn. I think that's where it comes to CS leadership or enablement within the company. If there's like an enablement team to help to teach these things. But we also live in a world right now where you can ask a simple question and the amount of information you get on any sort of AI it's a lot. You can learn very quickly. So I would say shame on you if you're not leveraging AI in that way, because if I rewind back to starting my career 20 years ago, none of this stuff existed. And so
I gotta do some math here, but it was pre-SaaS, so you didn't have telemetry, so you couldn't regurgitate those stats. You actually had to call them up and say, how's it going? Said when we installed this, we're gonna decrease your server load by 30%. Is that happening right now?
Absolutely. Exactly. And like cold calling, right? It was a BDR, no dial pad, none of these tools available. You just sent an email or you just called and then your boss was listening in on the line.
Or you showed up.
Advice, right? Or you showed up in person. And so you know, it's just great times. There's so much. It's a great time to be coming into this space in CS because you have access to so much information to help you get that knowledge. No more can you say, I just don't know. I don't know where to get that information.
On top of that,
I'll tell you where it exists.
To your point, it's like one of the things that frustrates me now when I talk to other CS leaders is they're looking at CS specific AI products. And I'm like, please, there are a lot of tools that already exist that are not specific to CS that you can use to move forward. I've talked to some CS leaders and I asked them, are you using Clay? And they're like, why would I use that? That's a sales and marketing tool. I'm like, do you ever have to look up your customers and figure out what's going on? Do you really need, I mean, how are you doing your customer intelligence?
Right.
How are you doing that? And that's one of the things that I really want to challenge other CS leaders. Go outside the box and just look for CS specific AI tools. Now, there are some that are out there that I really love. We can have another conversation about that, but broaden your horizon. To think about tools, regardless if they're made for CS or just general. I mean, we all have to look up customers and do some customer intelligence and research.
Yeah. I mean, we're go to market. That's the other thing, too. It's like I include customer success in part of go to market. We are
absolutely
part of that. And there are many tools out there that cater to all of the areas in that. So, yes, you can leverage information you already have. You can also learn from your sales team. What sales methodology are they using? Is there training that they're getting that you can also advocate for on your team? So it's like, look, let's look to first what we have before you go out, because you can just get inundated. There's, I don't know about the two of you, but or three of you, I should say, just a lot of messages on LinkedIn on, oh, let me ask you a question. And then they like just data dump all this information about a new CS tool. I'm like, there's just too many. It's become so noisy.
My more favorite cold opener is, I'm sorry to bother you, but, and I'm always like, well, then don't. If you're sorry to do it, then don't do it. Like the number of people who open their conversations, I'm so sorry to bother you. Well, then don't do that. But I do want to get us, you know, we've talked a lot about kind of the theory of this conversation. So sure. I would love to get each of you to stake a claim in the ground, proclaim the best way to do this. We talked about pods. We had some opinions on pods. But tell me, how do you set this up to be as successful as possible?
Okay. How do you set this up? I'll go first. I think it's change management and communication. So whatever structure you decide, you need to make sure that all parties impacted understand if their role is changing, if there's going to be a combined effort between sales and CS. Like you just have to lay out, here is the new structure. Here is why we're changing. Here's what to expect, and giving people an opportunity to react and respond to it. Then there's the education. So if something is changing, let's help people get on board with how to do that in their job. Let's compensate people accordingly, and let's be transparent about that compensation. I think if you're working in CS, you should absolutely know how your sales team is being compensated and vice versa. It's a question you can ask. And if people are not going to give you that answer, then I would question why they're not being transparent about it. I think we all need to understand how we're being compensated. Trying to think if there's anything else on it. And if it's going to impact the customer experience in some way, if their point of contact is going to change, remember to also communicate that out externally as well. So I think the big things are like change management, communication, education. And if people are asked to do a job, pay them for it, like pay them accordingly.
Andy, go ahead.
So I want to take the question, just how do you even get started to figure out who should own revenue? And I actually start with the question, how would you do it without CS? That is actually how I've gone back to my early 2000, early 2020-ish type roots there. It's leaning into lean customer success. I think so far, a lot of companies would assume CS should do it, and they just start hiring a bunch of CSMs. But they're missing the larger issue. CSMs can only do, and just like sales, they can only sell what the product actually does. And so if you have issues in your product, if you have issues in how things move between concept all the way through production, then you may need to address that. So asking the peers at the C-level, how are we going to do this if we had no CS leaders or we didn't have a CS team? Once you answer that question, you'll figure out where the gaps are on your product. What, how far can product take us? How far can sales take us? How far can marketing take us? Now I figure out from that where CS actually sits in that org. And then I can go through everything that the tactics, if you would, of how do I get this, the training that Eleni talked about, is like, how do you get that done? How do you now do that transition? But a lot of companies are going to struggle because they're not asking that question. How do we get this done as a team as if there's no CS?
Well, I lived in a world for a really long time without CS, and it was pretty easy.
Yeah.
You had account managers. The problem was that the account managers only focused on upsell, right? And they didn't focus on the value. And now we had all this telemetry and it was like, oh, let's go create a role because somebody built some software called Gainsight. So we need to propagate a role called that's going to go focus on this. And then we started seeing all the benefits and stuff like that. But I mean, the model's been done already, right? I'm not saying let's bring it all back to account management, but like it was pretty clear. We didn't have these conversations. Like salespeople don't walk around and say, who should sell? And devs aren't walking around saying, who should code? Who should do support? But so I just find it ridiculous that we're even like talking about this, even though it's great conversations. But back to the point, I got to agree with everything that Eleni started off with. And I would say to just add some things onto, I'm a little less on the touchy-feely change management aspects of things, but I'm a little bit more leveraged on the, like, what are our adherence KPIs, which goes to the change management. These are the things that you will be measured on right now. You'll be measured on your quarterly GRR. You will be measured on your X, your how many, in, you know, how many, you know, if we say the QBR is the way of doing this, or let's just say business reviews to take the quarterly aspect out of it. Some type of business meeting where you're showing outcomes, you should be having a standard for what those should be. If you're on all tier one accounts, you probably do it for all your tier one accounts, right? And then it scales its way down. But again, it gets down to KPIs, tools, and measurement, and then providing the education along the way for where people are saying, I always say, don't go get sales training, go shadow sales. I was just on with Jay, and we were talking about this before, and we grew up in professional services where we were tagged along with all the sales. So we lived with sales. We never complained about this ICP thing because we were in the rooms and we saw how hard it was to close deals and all the things you had to do to go through with it and everything. And we ran P&Ls and everything like that. And so we understood what the sales motions were like. So go shadow some salespeople and you'll see how they talk about your product and how they're selling on the value points and everything. That's way more valuable than some Coursera or something like that, right? So, okay, I'm going to turn the soapbox off and go from there, but you should probably get enough of my point out of that one. So
I love that. I love the idea of shadowing too. Oh, it's great. Shadowing though, without judgment, right? Because I could see people going and be like, oh, well, you didn't even sell our product right because we don't actually do those things that you promise, right? So go in with the right intentions of your shadow to actually learn something and to grow your own skill set rather than evaluate the person you're shadowing. So I have a question. Every time I do one of these events, whether it's a podcast or one of these conversations, I'm a continuous learner kind of a person. I know a lot of people who are joining us on this call are as well. So as we wrap up this conversation, I'd love to hear who you think is leading the charge. Who else should we be listening to? Who is changing the way we think about customer success?
I'll go first. I mean, this one is a person that a lot of people know, but I think that she is leading the charge. So Christy Feltrusso, we were talking about her before we went live on this. I just think her content on LinkedIn is very relevant, right? She is helping us understand how she's gone through her experience as a CS professional, what she's currently doing. You know, her organization, I think, puts on a lot of great webinars as well. So I always walk away with something from that post or that event that she's doing that makes me think about, you know, customer success in a different way or to try something. Or she's also a person, if you get her live and you're with her somewhere, you're able to have just a really good debate. So you may not agree maybe on her angle, but you want to get more information. She's just very open and approachable. So if you're not following her, I suggest that you do.
She's got some videos on my channel where she's F-bombing her way. So I highly recommend those. So, I actually try and not follow as many, apologies to you all, but do not follow CS people that much. And you know, they're comedians. They don't listen to other comedy shows because they're always afraid of consuming the content, which we were talking about a little before the call as well, too, on some things on that. But I also find, like, I want other opinions around the ecosystem of a SaaS company. So I follow CFOs, I follow RevOps people, I follow GTM people and things like that. That probably bores you all. So I will say there's one person that I follow, a handful of people, and one, if they're not a vendor for a CS product, I like them a lot more. And you're talking to somebody who sells a lot of CS stuff as well. And that's Cassie Young from Primary Venture. She's amazing. She's based in New York. And I doubt you to find anything she's ever written where you're like, that's bullshit. Like, she's just very smart, pragmatic, well thought out, and she's coming from the venture side of things as well. So that's my suggestion on that.
I'm like Jeff. There are some CS people I follow because I do enjoy reading some CS content. But I spend a lot of time now, you know, following and talking with people that are not traditionally CS. I'm talking to a lot of AI people, data scientists, RevOps, that area. My background's in data analytics, so this feels like going home for me. But the one person that I really enjoy talking to over the last couple of weeks in particular is a guy by the name of Dr. Mehmet Gokar, or however you pronounce his last name. I just call him Mehmet. But he's really someone to follow to really understand what AI can do and the data that fuels AI. And so I've really enjoyed those conversations because it helped me get grounded in thinking about AI beyond just, hey, I need something that does this one little thing. It's like, no, there's a whole strategy out there. There's a world of opportunity with AI. But how do you put your mind around it? How do you put your arms around it so you don't just explode your costs by adding in a bunch of tools that don't really give you any more clarity? Because now they're all
so much now. It's like saying software, right?
Exactly.
Right. So like, when people talk about AI, I'm like, you know, and what tools should you have? I'm like, well, everything should just be a signal, right? So are we talking generative AI where it's like, here's how to write a better email to your, you know, I'm sorry, but we are paying you for this. But like, and then there's the, like, there's all of this stuff going on in the background. Let's have something interpreted. So at the end of the day, all you need to do is get a trigger that said your customer went from green to yellow because some signal.
Exactly. And this is what the conversations I've been having with Mehmet really have been leading to. It's like, AI is not something new. It's just another technology, but you got to put your arms around it and stop looking for the silver bullet. There's not just one AI tool you're going to buy that's going to magically make you a better CSM. It's going to be how, you know, yes, there's some tools that are going to help you from an operation efficiency standpoint, but you need to think about AI as a leader. You need to think about it more holistically and think about how do you use it to find the signals, the hidden signals that you haven't been able to find.
Or good food recipes without having to read the whole intro blog type of thing.
Oh, absolutely. Notebook LM. Okay. I'm just saying Notebook LM.
I said not sponsored, you guys. Okay. So good to have this conversation. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for everyone who left comments and participated. We'll be doing more of these, but it's an incredible opportunity. And I feel very fortunate and grateful to talk to smart people like you. So thank you for joining me today.